Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week from the Seen and Heard Department here at Car Talk Plaza.
Everyone should bring their lunch. That's not good. We can't do that. Never mind.
Well, we were
we were arguing about grammar, but that's not what we want to talk about right now. But we were arguing about...
No, but I've given up. I mean, it's everyone should bring his lunch.
His or her.
His or, well...
See, I've coined a new...
As long as they bring my lunch.
As long as they bring something for me. But speaking of the Seen and Heard Department, this is advice from kids. Patrick, age 10. Never trust a dog to watch your food. That's good advice. Randy, 9. Stay away from prunes. This is for your kids. Emily, 10. Don't pull Dad's finger when he tells you to. Talia, 11. When your mom is mad at your dad, don't let her brush your hair. Kiyoyo, 9. Never hold a dustbuster and a cat at the same time. This is my favorite. Amir, age 9. You can't hide a piece of broccoli in a glass of milk. I love it.
Well, anyway, if you'd like to give my brother some advice, remember, this is a family show now, then give us a call. Or better yet, if you'd like to get some car advice, give us a call. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Molly from Pittsburgh.
Hi, Molly.
How you doing?
Well, I have an Altima that's given me some problems.
Ah.
It's a 1995 Altima SE. It's got about 66,000 miles. And whenever I'm driving it, well, it's off and on, really. Whenever I let up the clutch, it sounds like the sound of a cowbell. Like you're hitting a spoon against a coffee can.
As a cowbell.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like a cowbell.
A dull...
But it's muffled.
Boink. Yeah.
Boink, boink.
Yeah, that's exactly.
And this happens as the clutch is somewhere between all the way down and all the way up?
That's right.
As it's coming up.
It seems to be a little bit closer to all the way up than all the way down.
But you must be moving in order to get this. In other words, you can't sit there.
No, I'll bet you're not.
Wait a minute.
I'll bet you're not.
You're leading the witness. If you sit there at a traffic light and step on the clutch, release it, step on the clutch, release it, does it make the noise?
It doesn't seem to do it. Like, I tried to have my husband listen to the sound. I'm sitting in the garage, and I can't get it to make it.
Was the engine running?
Yes.
And you let the clutch in and out, and nothing happened?
Nothing happened.
Now, how about if you try to accelerate faster from a dead stop? In other words, if you're trying to accelerate from a stoplight, as you're letting the clutch up, you get the boing. If you are trying to accelerate faster from a stop, as opposed to gently, is the sound more pronounced? Is it more likely to make it? Is it deeper? Does it change at all?
It doesn't seem to. It typically doesn't start until I've been in the car for 3 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, my first inclination is that it's a motor mount, because when you let the clutch up, what you're doing is you're asking the engine to turn the wheels, basically.
And as we know, every action has an equal and opposite reaction.
Right. So as the crankshaft of the engine turns clockwise, it wants to turn the entire engine, that is the block of the engine, counterclockwise.
Okay.
And the motor mounts are there to prevent that from happening. So you could have a bad motor mount.
Because if the motor mounts weren't there, every time the car took off, the motor would jump out from underneath the hood.
Right, and go flipping down the road behind
flipping
you.
Down the road sideways.
So it sounds like I don't really need to worry about this at all.
Yeah.
But I think that's what you have. And the reason you can't reproduce it when you're stopped is that when you step on the clutch and let it out and push it in again, you're not asking the motor to move the car because you're not in gear.
Right.
You might want to try the following.
Okay.
No, never mind. Is our insurance paid up, Dougie? He says no. Okay, forget it. Molly, it's been great talking to you.
No, you got to tell her.
I want you to set the handbrake.
There you go.
Okay, and put the thing in first gear, but don't let the... Maybe you need to have a... We do this all the time in the shop. You need
this
to take it to a professional.
This is what we would do.
What we would do is the following. We'd set the handbrake, and we would pull the car, before we did that, we'd pull the car up to a tree so that it couldn't move. And then you would try putting the thing in first gear and then let the clutch out a little bit.
Okay.
Hopefully to the point where it just begins to engage, uh-huh. and then you'd hear the noise. And I think it's either the aforementioned motor mount,
mm-hmm.
or it's a loose joint on the front exhaust pipe. There's a flexible joint there, and you're hearing the thing go clink, clink.
I'm voting for the motor mount myself.
Yeah, but if you take it someplace where they have the courage to do this and...
And it's not their car.
and the insurance paid up, then they'll find it in 2 minutes.
Okay.
Good luck, Molly.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for your call.
Bye-bye.
Bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Andy from Seattle.
Hi, Andy from Seattle.
I've got a 1986 Mazda pickup, and a couple of weeks ago, the truck overheated several times, and in the end, I wound up cooking the engine. And I'm trying to figure out, and I'm trying to figure out if it's worth fixing. Now, I've priced the parts and thought about what I might...
The parts. There's only one part.
Well,
engine.
Yeah, the engine. And I'm considering what I myself might accomplish in my, or might attempt in my driveway. My working theory now is that if I can get away with just replacing the head, it's worth it in this truck. If I have to replace the whole engine, it's not going to be worth it.
How many miles are on this beast?
197,000.
197. Mm-hmm. And when you say you cooked it, what happened? Like the little thermometer pop out?
Yeah. It overheated once, but the temperature gauge didn't go up. Idiot lights didn't go on. Just steam from under the hood. I opened the hood. There was a coolant line blown. I replaced the coolant line. I drove another 45 minutes. It did it again, different hose.
Ah, okay.
And you would think at this point I would have stopped. But third time's a charm, and that time it just totally lost power, nothing. And there was no compression through a couple of the cylinders. I pulled the head, and sure enough, the head was both warped and cracked.
Cool.
But the engine cranks.
The engine cranked fine. It was just nothing that was there. No compression in a couple cylinders.
So you've probably melted the valves. And well, you got to replace the head anyway. So you want to go to the junkyard.
So you priced the head.
Right.
A head. You priced like a new head and valves and all that stuff?
No.
Junkyard.
No, I actually found a great junkyard here in Seattle that lets you go out and pull the parts yourself. And I already got the head. $30.
Get out of town.
So I'm not too deep in now.
Yeah, I think you take a chance.
Absolutely.
Now, if you wanted to, if you were energetic, you could replace the rings.
How would he even know?
Oh, what do you mean? Oh, you've got the head off already, right? It's just a simple matter.
It's just another month to get to the rings.
I believe on this truck you can take the oil pan right off. And then you're looking at, you ready for this, Andy?
Yeah.
You're looking at the bottom of the connecting rods, and you're 8 little nuts away from having the pistons out of the block. There are just 2 nuts on each connecting rod.
Right.
And you take off the bottom cap, and you push the pistons up with a broomstick, and one by one, pop, 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 they pop out. And then you got to go and buy a cylinder hone.
Yeah.
Everyone needs one of those.
A ring compressor.
A ring compressor and a set of rings.
This is a lot of tools.
Well, I mean, you obviously love the truck. You've driven it for 197,000 miles, and had this not happened, you'd drive it forever, right?
The truth is, you would not have had the opportunity to replace the rings.
And I think you're going to be disappointed if you put the head on and you don't do rings.
Rings is a nice little job to do.
And you'll learn new skills. And what better vehicle to learn them on than one that you're ready to junk anyway?
Yeah, well, and the expense, I mean, the expense is minuscule. Unfortunately, the rings are going to cost you more than the head and all the valves together.
Well, yeah, I got the head for $30, and the gasket set is going to be 150.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the rings are going to be another 150, and an oil pan gasket. It's going to cost you about $2,500. You know, but when this is all done, you will have done a ring job.
Man.
I mean, not many can say that.
How many people, when people say, how's your truck? You can say, well, I just did the head and the ring job. And everyone will, I mean, are you married?
Yeah.
You are?
Yeah.
It's too bad.
Women will be throwing themselves.
Women are going to be throwing themselves at you. When they found out that you replaced the head and did the rings.
Oh.
Well, I mean, maybe your own wife will just go nutsy over it.
Yeah, you'll be the hero at the water cooler. You'll have to fend them off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll look forward to that.
All right, go for it, man.
Yeah.
See you later.
The benefits derive, only a small percentage of the benefits derive from having a truck that runs. The rest of it is your self-esteem and your reputation.
And the folklore.
Of Andy from Seattle.
There you go. Getting to 200,000 is going to be treat enough, I guess.
Yeah, you may just about do that.
Well,
before it blows up.
You got your own priorities. I know what mine would be.
See you later, Andy.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Good luck. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. It's Jim Davis, your consulting chemist.
Hey, Dr. Davis.
What did we do wrong now? Hi, Jim.
Jim Davis is first chair of chemistry at Harvard, world's greatest university.
I think that's a bit of an exaggeration.
Yes, it is, but why not?
Why not? That's what this show is all about.
How are you, Jim?
I'm fine, thanks, guys. I heard your call from the sweet southern lady about the Coca-Cola on the battery terminals.
Yes, we should have known that chemistry.
Well, no, I think you were doing very well.
Until?
Here. Yeah, we did look into it. I don't know if you know this, but I'm from Magnolia, Mississippi myself, but I never heard of pouring coke on the battery cables, but I checked with another southern chemist friend of mine, Graham Dennis from Augusta, Georgia, and he said, oh yeah, we do that all the time, so there must be something to it. So we did find a battery terminal down in the basement of the Science Center that was pretty corroded.
Yeah.
And we got a Coke and a Dr. Pepper, and just as a control, we got some seltzer water. Now, you know, the secret of success in chemistry is not doing it yourself, but having a good person.
A graduate student do it.
Absolutely. So
you shouldn't get hurt.
Yeah, that's right. You always keep a graduate student between you and a dangerous experiment.
Right.
Daniel Rosenberg is the chemistry demonstrator. He's the guy who blows up stuff for me in my classes.
Yes. Oh, we know him. Lefty.
Daniel Rosenberg is right here on the phone. Say hello, Daniel.
Hello.
Hey, Daniel.
Hi, Daniel.
So Daniel did this experiment, and I think I'd like to let him tell you about it.
Yes. Well, we scraped the fluffy white residue from a battery terminal and put it into a set of beakers, and then we poured Coke and Dr. Pepper and carbonated water onto each three of them.
Yeah.
All of them dissolved.
Oh.
It may be the carbonation, but also there's phosphate, phosphoric acid or phosphate, in both Coke and Dr. Pepper.
Yes, we did discuss that, as I recall.
I know you did, and I can't imagine that the flavoring makes any difference. But it seems that the lady would have been just fine pouring a can of her favorite Dr. Pepper on it.
But what is the white stuff?
Well, you know, I was hoping you wouldn't ask me that. We're not quite sure.
Well, that was my problem. I couldn't figure out what it was.
It could be lead hydroxide. It could be a lead hydroxide carbonate combination. It's not lead oxide because that's yellow, and this stuff is white.
Oh, so we didn't do any kind of spectrographic analysis.
No, that's right.
But we're going to. I'm sure.
Danny, are you still there?
We're warming up the machine.
There are some other metals. You know, there's a little bit of antimony and sometimes some tin mixed in with the lead in batteries. And so, you know, I don't know whether those things were involved either. But
we could spend thousands of dollars on this question.
Daniel's going to.
Or we could call some guy in a gas station in Chattanooga. And he'll tell us what it is.
As long as the Car Talk Plaza is chemistry lab is buying this equipment.
Don't worry. Just put it on our tab, Jim.
Absolutely. But, you know, to answer the question, I think we answered the question that Dr. Pepper seems to work just as well as Coca-Cola does.
But you also said that the bottled water worked just as well.
It didn't seem to work quite as well, but it did work.
It did.
So I suspect that the phosphate has a little bit to do with it in the soda drinks.
Yeah.
Yeah, we thought so too, but yeah. Then again, what the heck do we know?
Well, you know, it works.
Thanks, Daniel. Thanks, Jim, very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye. These guys have nothing to do.
Yeah, and I love the way academicians will go out of their way to take reality out of the situation. I mean, you could have found three batteries and poured the stuff right on the battery.
No, they went to the basement.
They went to the basement. They find one battery. They take little samples, and they put it in Petri dishes, and they bring it back up to the lab, and then they play around with
it. And they're growing mold spores.
God forbid you should get yourself dirty.
No.
And they send a grad student now to do it. I love it. How do you get these jobs in academia?
You had one.
Huh?
All right, look, it's time for us to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll answer last week's puzzle, which was about change.
You trying to change co-hosts again?
Well, I'm always trying to change co-hosts, but it's not that kind of change. It's the kind of change you get when you buy something.
Oh, like change for a $20 bill?
Right, like when you buy a car. Anyway, we'll be back with the answer to last week's puzzler and more of your questions right after a short break.
So please stay tuned. And even though Goldilocks wonders who's been messing with her radio's presets whenever she hears us say it, this is NPR. Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like if you're a dentist and want to remind your patients there are things more painful than a root canal.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, here to talk about cars, car repair, and, of course, the answer to last week's puzzler.
Change.
That's right. I said this was from my currency event series, and it was sent in by a fellow named Milton Mersinger. Are you ready?
Couldn't be ready yet.
I was afraid of that. The other day, I was third in line for the cashier at my neighborhood convenience store.
Mm-hmm.
The first person in line bought something that cost $3.75. She handed the clerk a $5 bill and received a dollar and a quarter in change, right?
Sounds right.
Yeah.
Is that the puzzler?
No.
You have to figure out if that's right.
You knew the answer to that one, didn't you?
I did.
Well, I'll continue.
Right.
Customer number two bought two items that totaled $4.99. He paid with a $10 bill.
Let me guess.
Yeah.
$5 and a penny.
You got it.
Hey!
Finally, it was my turn. I placed my items on the counter. You know, the usual. Hair nets, a copy of the National Enquirer, an extra large tube of soothing hemorrhoidal relief gel. And my total was $17.95. That gel's gone up a lot in price. I paid cash as well, forked over a 20. And as the cashier started to hand me my change, she stopped and asked if it was okay if she gave me a $2 bill instead of two ones along with the nickel that I was due.
Yeah.
So I was due $2.05 change.
Yeah, right.
I said, absolutely, I'd love a $2 bill. And as I was admiring my uncommon currency, it occurred to me that there was something unusual about the change that all three of us had just received.
Really?
Yeah. Now, the first lady got a dollar and a quarter.
Yeah.
The second guy got a $5 bill and a penny,
yeah.
And I got a $2 bill and a nickel. The question is, what was unusual about those three sets of change?
I have no idea. They seem perfectly normal to me.
Well, that's what I was worried about.
Well, yeah.
The first person, the first customer received two pieces of currency as change, right?
Yeah.
He got back a dollar bill
yeah.
and a 25-cent piece.
Yeah.
Okay? And the second person got a $5 bill and a penny.
Yeah.
Now, do you know who's on the dollar bill?
No.
I didn't think so. Because you know,
somebody's on it? Wait a minute. Here's a dollar bill. Oh, wait. It's George Washington.
Wasn't he a classmate of yours in high school?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why I recognized him.
Yeah, you guys called him Georgie Porgy. And I know you don't deal in quarters much, but if you look at a quarter, old George is also on a 25-cent piece, see? So that person got back two pieces of currency that have a likeness of the same president.
Yeah.
Well, the same thing happened with the person that got the $5.01. Lincoln is on the $5 bill. Lincoln's on the what? The penny.
No kidding.
And that's why I was excited to get the $2. What did I get for change? I got the $2.05 that I got because Jefferson is on the $2 bill as well as the nickel.
No kidding.
Pretty cute, eh?
That is very cute. I like it.
Do we have a winner?
Wait, I got to...
No, I want my quarterback and my dollar, too.
All right, you got it.
Oh, jeez, I knew there was a scam going on here somehow.
All right, we have a winner.
Thank
goodness. Our winner this week is Brian Culver from Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and for having his answer selected at random from among all the correct answers that we got, Brian is going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division, with which he can get our new Distracted Driving T-shirt.
Yeah, well, if you want to convey your belief that talking on the phone while driving is about as smart as defusing a bomb while playing Donkey Kong, you may be interested in Car Talk's latest T-shirt.
It's kind of hard to describe
it. It is. So best to have a look at it on the Shameless Commerce Division of CarTalk.com if you're interested, Brian.
And congratulations for being this week's Puzzler winner.
Now, we have a new puzzler still to come, so stay tuned for that. In the meantime, we'll try to answer any questions you might have. Our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Kathleen from Orcas Island.
Hi, Kathleen, with a K, of course, right?
Of course.
From what?
Orcas?
Orcas Island.
Where's that?
It's off Washington State, the coast of Washington State,
oh, yeah.
San Juan Islands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard of it.
Yeah. It's about an hour ferry ride off the coast.
Okay, so what's up?
Well, we have an 87 Subaru, and my husband tells me that this car has some kind of lock that engages for hills. And on this particular Subaru, it engages whenever it wants to sometimes.
Oh, it has something called hill hold.
Correct. So as I was driving home one day, I was driving and I kept smelling a little bit of smoke or burning. And by the time I got home, the front wheel hub was burning, obviously, and melting the hubcap. So my husband had to come out and douse it with water.
Great.
And it was just steaming everywhere. Now, is that fixable?
Not anymore. It might have been fixable.
Exactly.
But it was just one wheel that was burning up?
Correct. The right front wheel hub.
Oh, I don't think it was the hill hold.
No.
You don't?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, because...
What would that be?
Well, by the way, the way the hill hold thing works is that when you step on the clutch and step on the brake at the same time, it then enables you to take your foot off the brake as long as you hold the clutch down, because it's sending pressure to the brakes to hold the car from rolling down the hill. But it's sending it to all of them.
Uh-huh.
So if the right front is the only one that's misbehaving here...
Yes, it is.
I'm going to guess that the problem is in that right front wheel and that you have just a frozen, you know, caliper.
So a frozen caliber?
Yeah. And
that would certainly make things get very, very hot.
It got very, very hot.
Did the car have a tendency to keep making right-hand turns as you were driving?
Well, a little bit. I had my stepson in the car with me, and the brakes didn't work at a certain point, and I looked at him, and I said, oh, my God. And he just sat there, looked at me, no comments, and I was kind of panicking. And
How old is he?
He's 14.
Oh, he was terrified, the poor kid. You'll never get in a car again.
And so I said, get out of the car, get your dad. And he nonchalantly called for his dad, and they just kind of looked at it and doused it with water, and there I was.
And there it sits now?
And there it sits. It has not been driven since.
So will you guys try to fix this yourselves, or you want to take it someplace and have it done?
We would like to take it someplace to have it done.
You're going to have it towed.
Right.
Or drive on three wheels.
Okay.
Well, it may be now that the thing has cooled off that, in fact, whatever was wrong with it has has gotten to the point where it's going to enable you to drive it.
Okay.
And for example, if the caliper was frozen because there's a restriction in the brake hose, then in fact, if you don't use the brakes too much on
or
the way
at
to
all.
Or at all on the way to the repair shop, you might be okay.
How far is the repair shop?
Oh, not that far. Maybe a half a mile to the rear.
Oh, you might make it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, as long as the car moves, you'll know right off if the car moves. If you put it in gear,
stick shift.
Yes.
Drive it there in second gear.
In second gear?
Yeah, because then that way you won't have to use the brakes.
Okay.
Hardly.
Okay.
Yeah. And wear a football helmet in case you have to jump out halfway.
Right.
And bring a fire extinguisher with you.
Oh, yeah, that too.
That too. Okay, I'll be prepared.
But I'm going to guess that you're going to need a right front caliper and or the flex hose that goes to it.
Okay.
Yeah, and probably pads and you know, maybe a disc rotor, or at least it'll have to be machined, and you're probably going to need new fuzzy dice and all that. So
$375.
That's my guess, too.
$375.
Maybe a little more.
Okay.
Good luck, Kathleen.
Thank you very much.
Plus tip and gratuity.
Oh, that too, yeah. Tax gratuity and all that. But
yeah.
$850. See you later.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Steve. I'm calling from Amherst, Massachusetts.
Hey, Steve. What's going on?
All right. I got a 93 Eagle Summit wagon, and it's developed a twitch.
Yeah.
Eagle Summit. For those of you who don't know, the Eagle Summit is the closest relative to the closest known relative to the Mitsubishi Expo, of which I am a proud owner.
All right, good. So can you tell me what part is twitching?
What's twitching? What's going on?
Okay, so here's the thing. The car has outside rear view mirrors, and when you're driving maybe 40 miles an hour or more, usually, you know, sort of highway driving, not so much in town, and you turn a little bit, just turn the steering wheel a few degrees either direction, the passenger side mirror starts to twitch about once every second. Twitch, 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 making kind of a clicking sound. Everybody in the car is distracted, and of course you can't really see out of the mirror.
If you were looking in the mirror as it twitched, what would you see?
You know, you see that the view behind the car gradually changes, so it goes moves a little bit.
And it's changing always in the same direction.
Yeah.
Going further and further away from the car or closer and closer to the car?
I think it goes so that you see more of the car and less of, you know, the
so you could see your mother-in-law putting her lipstick on in the back seat.
Sooner or later.
Yeah, that's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When did you have the
accident?
I bought the car 3 years ago, and it seemed like it was in good shape, and I haven't had an accident since then.
You have not?
No. Well, you're going to have an accident. This mirror going like this.
And when did this twitching start?
It's been a while, like probably over the last year, and I really noticed it. My wife and I went up to Maine last summer, and that's when we really noticed it a lot.
And exactly when does it happen? You're driving along on our road.
Yeah. Yeah, so then you just turn, you know, maybe let's say you turn left a little bit. The road just, you know, turns, and you turn left, and then all of a sudden it starts. Now, if you turn the wheel back, especially, you know, pretty hard right, it will stop. So now you're ending up, you know, heading over towards the ditch.
Oh, you must be fun to drive back.
Well, and I was thinking that, you know, state police might really notice this. I'm totally going to get it fixed, and I know I should take it in, but I thought, I really am curious, like, how can that be, that turning the steering wheel does that?
Well, how many people drive the car?
Just two, my wife and I.
How tall is your wife?
Short, 5'2".
How tall are you?
6'1".
Do you ever think of getting married again? To a taller woman?
Right. How is it dancing?
So are you suggesting it has something to do with there being someone in the passenger seat?
No. I'm suggesting a way to fix it so it doesn't happen again. But it requires cutting a wire.
Okay.
And I just wanted to make sure the mirror was in the right spot when you cut it.
Like, I see.
Well, you could simply unplug the mirror by taking the door panel apart. That would be the chicken's way out.
Uh-oh.
But that wouldn't be any good, because then one of you would, unless you could compromise on the right position of the mirror, you could then keep it in one spot.
Yeah.
But that wouldn't be elegant.
Well, elegant
would be we tell you exactly what's wrong with it.
Well, I'm going to attempt to do that and just shut up for a minute. It could easily, I mean, I don't...
I have to warn you, Steve.
Yeah.
He's got to be digging deep for this answer.
I just want you to know. We're not going to be able to prove him wrong anyway. So.
Well, here's what I would use a systematic approach.
Oh, good.
The problem is either in the switch
or
the relay, if it has a relay for this business.
Okay.
Or it's in the wiring between the switch and the door.
That seems pretty safe.
Okay. Now, that pretty much covers it.
Can I ask one other question? Does it ever happen if you're sitting in your driveway?
No.
Of course not. He has to be in motion.
Yeah.
He's got to be in motion.
He's going to be turning. So centrifugal force.
Good. That's
is
good.
At
that's
work
a,
here.
That's the point.
And
I
would start by merely pulling the switch out. That switch pops right out.
Yeah.
And then I would drive the car.
Ooh.
If you unplug that switch and the problem is gone, then I would assume that it's the switch.
Yes.
If that doesn't solve
the problem,
then you know it isn't the switch, and now you have the unenviable task of ripping the car apart, which we'll be happy to help you with because you're only right up the street in Amherst.
Okay,
we can be there in a couple of hours.
Oh, that sounds great.
You don't want to address the issue of how centrifugal force is causing this electronic, no moving parts switch.
Yes.
Well,
right.
Look it. If I wanted to address it, I would have done it already. Of course, I didn't want to address it. Jeez. You ever hear the expression, let sleeping dogs lie?
Well, that's right.
I was about to say, bye, Steve. Have a nice day.
Yeah.
Good luck.
No. I can't let you get away with that because I knew you were going to be digging deep.
That's why I think there's a relay involved, and I think the relay is the culprit.
And where would that relay be?
Are you kidding me?
Don't you own the same car, though?
A different model.
Oh, different model.
Yeah, what year's yours? Mine's in 92.
Mine's 93.
I don't know where that relay is, but I'm sure you can find out easily.
Well, yours
enough.
Doesn't have power mirrors.
It does, too.
It does?
Yes, indeed.
That heap has power mirrors?
No, they all do. I don't think you can get it without power mirrors. It was a luxury car in its day.
Well, I mean, you're interested in fixing this yourself, huh?
Well, I mean, I just am mostly curious. I mean, I know I can take it to the mechanic and have him replace the whole thing.
Well,
but
if the switch thing doesn't work, the next thing to do is open the door.
Here's the other possibility that has come to me recently.
Good.
In the last 10 seconds.
That when you're turning...
Yeah.
It isn't necessarily centrifugal force, but somehow or another, something, maybe even the transmission or the linkage, is impinging upon a wire and grounding it and making the thing, completing the circuit like the switch would do. That's why I suggest taking the switch out, because I'm going to suggest that when you do that, it's not going to fix it, and that you have a chafed wire someplace.
All righty, and you can see some kind of like anatomical link between the transmission or whatever and
it could be anywhere. Uh-huh. I don't know where
the wires go.
Yeah.
But they don't take a direct path. They're not running up across the seat.
Gotcha.
So somewhere or another, those wires are buried, and I'd be willing to bet that one of those wires is getting chafed, and when you make a turn, you are causing a complete circuit to ground.
Yeah.
Exactly, and that's making – and the reason it goes clunk, clunk, clunk is it's coming all the way in.
Yes.
And then it can't go any farther.
Yeah, there's no question about that, because when I press the switch, you know, the L or R switch to make it move, it does that when it gets to the end of its travel. So it's just like the switch was being pressed and kept pressed. Right.
And this will do this whether you have that switch in the L or R position?
Oh, absolutely.
It's a wire. It's not the switch.
Uh-huh.
It's a wire.
Uh-huh.
I'm convinced of it.
I like it.
It's probably the switch. Good luck, Steve.
Thanks for your help, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
It could be right there, you know, right in the door.
Well, the thing that came to mind is it could be where the wires go through the A-pillar.
Exactly.
Into the door. It could be that the body is flexing enough right there to cause, because those wires break after a number of years. And it could be that all the problem is, Steve, are you there? That the problem is right at the door itself.
I think so, too. That would be nice.
It would be. It would be lucky for Steve.
It would be certainly easy to look.
Yeah, no, in fact, those wires run through a rubber, looks like a little concertina.
Yeah,
and
if you cut that thing open,
you'll probably see a couple of wires are broken in there, and they're touching and grounding out.
Wouldn't that be nice?
It would be.
Takes a little piece of black tape, wraps it up, and the thing is fixed.
Would be. It's
fetch.
Yes. It doesn't sound like it. Hey, Tom, you know what it's time for now?
Is this when the president of NPR comes running into the control room, bangs his head on the glass, and demands our resignations?
No, that was earlier in the show.
He's been here already.
This is where we take a short break and get ready for the new puzzler.
Ah, yes. We'll be back in just a moment.
far, down the blacktop tar. I'm traveling, gonna see the sights, gonna drive all night, keep the headlights bright, gonna make some real plans, gonna see some new lands. Take a steady hand home. Follow
And even though mathematicians try to figure out how 1 plus 1 can equal 0 whenever we say it, this is NPR. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tapper Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler.
I just have to say that we had to take a short break there so that my brother could figure out how to unclarify a few things with the new Puzzler.
Well,
people think you just pop in here and you give us the Puzzler. There's a great deal of preparation involved in the unclarification process.
Indeed.
People don't understand that.
It ain't just obfuscating anymore.
No. It's clear unclarifying.
Well, it seems that there was this young gal who had had a couple of pretty bad accidents, and her grandmother decided to give her an unusual gift. She gave her a large sum of money with which she was to buy a brand new Volvo, nice safe car.
Yeah.
The only condition being that when she got the car, Grandma wanted to see it to make sure that she didn't just take the money and go out and buy something like a Firebird.
Yeah, or a necklace.
Exactly.
A pearl necklace.
So on the first available Saturday, she decides to drive to Grandma's house, which is 120 miles away. And because she's not particularly eager to get there, she gets on the road. Of course, these kinds of puzzles always assume that her house is right on the highway and so is Grandma's, and there's no time lost in accelerating. So
right.
That's understood.
And there's no friction.
And there's no friction either, there's a vacuum.
Right?
So she gets on the highway, and she sets the, in her brand new car, she sets the cruise control for 40 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And she drives the 120 miles to Grandma's house.
And does Grandma live right on the highway?
Grandma, right on the highway. Right, exit 12.
I got it.
And so she sets it. In fact, this car has also a little computer that says your average speed is 40 miles an hour. She says, great.
Yeah.
So she gets there. You know, she doesn't want to spend too much time with Grandma because she starts asking about, does she have any boyfriends and all this jazz, you know. So she hangs around for a little while, and she shows Grandma the car, and she decides to leave. And on the way back, she's eager to get back home because she wants to get to the tattoo parlor before it closes and all that. So she sets the cruise control for 60 miles an hour.
Mm.
And the same, she travels the same road, the same 120 miles. And when she gets home, she gets into the house and she does a little figuring. She says, let me see. She said, I drove 120 miles up, 120 miles back. That was 240 miles,
mm-hmm.
right? And 40 miles an hour up and 60 miles an hour back. So my average speed was 50 miles an hour. And it should have taken me she's a very precise individual.
Yeah.
4.8 hours.
Oh.
But it took me 5.
Oh.
How can that be? Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on a postcard or on the back of a $20 bill or the front of a $20 bill. We don't really care.
We don't.
And send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238. Or you can email your answer to us from cartalk.com. But right now, if you have a question about your car or anything, give us a call. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-228-255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Janet calling from Gustavus, Alaska.
Janet from who?
From where?
From Gustavus, Alaska.
Gustavus?
G-U-S.
T-A-V-U-S.
Gustavus.
Gustavus.
Gustavus?
Gustavus, Alaska. Not that it matters because it's Alaska, but what edge of Alaska is it? Middle? Left end, right end, bottom end.
Yeah, when you fall off the edge, where can we tell your parents to send the search party?
Where would they go looking for you?
The southeastern edge, near Juneau.
southeastern edge.
Oh, this is the warm part of Alaska.
Oh, it's tropical, yep.
So what's cooking, Janet?
Well, I live in a really small town. It's about 300 people. And it's really common that when we see friends driving down the road that we want to stop and talk with, that you'll just pull your vehicle up alongside your friend's vehicle, and you often right in the middle of the road, and you start chatting away. And we've been wondering, kind of the whole town's been wondering, if you're just stopped for a short period of time, is it better to turn the engine off or to leave it running?
What do you mean by better?
Well, is it better for the car, for the engine, or is it better for the environment to turn it off? Does it burn more gas?
Yeah, well, they do burn more gas when they're running. We've established that in the lab. That's why they recommend you turn the car off at night. But
my father, who lives there near your fair city, Cambridge.
Does he?
He thought he had the answer for me.
What's his answer?
His answer, well, he said that it has to do with whether the vehicle is old or new.
He's right.
He's right about that.
What typically happened in cars of yesteryear is when you turned the thing off, almost all carburetors used to flood over a little bit and pour gasoline into the manifold that wasn't really ever going to be used, at least to move the vehicle. And usually on restart, the thing would run a little rough.
Blow
a little black smoke, exactly, and burn off that extra gas, which was a terrible waste.
Right, so most vehicles in Gustavus would fall into that category of being pretty old.
Of being pretty old.
Oh, so you want to keep yours running.
So many of them are, in fact, carbureted.
Yeah, there are a fair number of 70s vehicles running around town or, from the 80s.
Yeah, I would say unless
you... Okay, I got my number.
I'm writing it down on this little piece of... Wait a minute.
If you were going to be stopped for more than X...
Correct. I want to know that X time.
That is my number.
Whoa.
5 minutes.
I got 3 minutes.
4 minutes.
4 minutes. Yeah.
Now, is that you're just considering the gas that you would burn, or is that also to wear and tear on the starter, on the battery?
We put all
the factors in.
We just use integral calculus to factor in all the important data, and we consider that if it's less than 4 minutes, leave it running. If it's going to be more than 4 minutes, if you run into a girlfriend, you got to just shut it right off.
Oh, someone else is going to get into trouble besides me.
Well,
what do you think
it's
about?
Just an observation that women can talk. Guys see each other.
How you doing?
What did they say?
Pretty good.
Oh, how's it hanging? And they're on their way. And that's pretty much it. You get a moose night. Okay, talk to you next week. But women can talk for hours.
Well, you see, though, in Gustavus, people are often stopped talking about building projects. And you know how guys like to talk about building.
Well,
everybody's always building things around here. It's a big construction zone. So.
Oh, yeah? Well, what are you building for? What's the end goal here?
Oh, people are building cabins and saunas and sheds. Everybody's got to have sheds. You need a shed.
But there's no, commercial construction going on. The Four Seasons Hotel is not operating up there. Yeah.
No, thank God. So if...
It's got one
The
One Season Hotel.
Winter.
Yeah. We give every guest a pair of long underwear.
So if it's an old vehicle and you're stopped for more than 4 minutes,
shut it off. Yeah. But no, there are other factors to consider. If it's minus 20 degrees, you're going to be freezing after about 3 minutes, especially with the window open.
Right.
We didn't put that into the calculation. Our calculation, which we did independently, but we know how we think. It involved the use of fuel, emissions that were going to come out of the car, the cost of the battery and starting it up, the cost of buying a new starter.
But we also assumed an ambient temperature of 55 degrees.
Actually, that's about right. It's a pretty mild place.
Well, if it's pretty mild, then I would shut the thing off if it's going to be 4 minutes or more.
Okay.
That's my recommendation. I'm sure we'll get 5,000 emails to support many other theses.
I see.
And this is for carbureted cars, which is what you guys have there.
Yeah.
Right.
See, the new cars, they don't use up extra fuel. When you shut it off, it shuts off.
The injectors just stop.
And when you start it up, it doesn't take more fuel to start it up than it takes to run.
Okay.
And if it's really cold, you can just talk to each other on your cell phones and leave the windows closed.
We don't have cell phones.
I didn't
here.
Think so. See you, Janet.
At least most people don't. Thank you
Good question.
Very much.
Thanks, Janet.
Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK.
Those are the kinds of things you have to think about when you live in Gustavus.
Yeah. I would pronounce it Gustavus.
Yeah, Gustav.
Gustav, right.
Gustav, tell us. All other women are jealous.
No, that was Alma Tellison. Gustav said, this is the Fräulein I must have. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys.
Hi, who's this?
This is Max of Monroe, North Carolina, y'all.
Monroe, North Carolina.
Hi, Max.
Man. I'm not really from here, but I'm a transplant like everyone else here.
Oh, you are? Why? What's in Monroe that has lured people to its city limits?
Well, there's a lot of Yankees that have moved down here because most of them are like me. They're too old and fat to be living in Maine and shoveling the roof every week.
That would explain
it. I mean, you're definitely a Yankee.
Well, I'm not really. I'm an Ohio farm boy originally, but I transplanted to Maine for 18 years, and then I've been down here 5.
Oh, good for you. You're getting smarter as you get older.
My wife really hopes so.
So what's cooking?
I've got the opportunity to acquire a 1994 Mustang for almost no money.
This one of those Army surplus things like the Jeeps packed in Cosmoline? Go ahead.
You know, there's always a hook. Here's the hook. The thing's sitting in 54 feet of water, and it's been there for 6 years.
54 feet deep?
Yep.
Deep?
I'm one of the owners now of a local dive shop.
Oh, and one of you guys found this thing, right?
Well, ever since we've been diving in this quarry, we knew it was there, because we have used the quarry for training and our own diving. Well, now the city, because we had a big drought, they want to use it for water.
Yeah.
All this stuff's got to come out.
There goes the diving business.
They may still let us use it. They may not. I don't know. But anyhow, the bottom line is that this Mustang was an insurance fraud job, and everybody knew it was there. And the car looks, I mean, obviously, the interior and the seats and all that's going to be junk. My question was, is there one chance in any that the drivetrain would still have any use to it?
Well, you know.
Well, don't forget, it's underwater, which means there's not
no
a
air.
Lot of oxygen.
No, things don't rust underwater. In fact, people find trees underwater all the time, you know, that have been underwater and stuck in mud for maybe a century or two, and they don't rot.
Well, as you know, if you look at ships, they only rust at the water line.
Right.
Where there's air. And the part that's underneath the water doesn't rust, as far as I know. Not that I know anything about this. I know nothing.
No, I don't know. I didn't.
But, I mean, if there's no...
When they started making ships of steel, I lost interest.
Well, we dive stuff that's, you know, German U-boats that have been underwater since the war. And the only thing that affects them is if there's a big storm and they physically get torn up.
Right. So you're hoping to salvage the engine and the transmission, which you could buy in a junkyard for about $300.
Yeah, but that wouldn't be romantic.
Oh, I see.
That wouldn't be romantic.
Oh, so you would want to showcase these pieces somehow by putting them into a car and saying, by the way,
this car was underwater for 9 years.
Well, the body and everything's still in great condition. I mean, I've sat in this car many times.
Oh.
This lady couldn't pay for the car, so she shoved it off the edge of the quarry like you see in the movies.
There's no one in the trunk or anything.
Nope. The local police divers even checked that out.
How far did it drop before it hit water?
Oh, like 25 feet.
Hmm.
She left her name and address on a piece of paper behind. That's how they caught her.
No kidding.
Well, I mean, let's think about what you're going to get for your trouble. You're going to get a body. The entire interior has to go. It's going to be destroyed. So you're going to have to put in a new roof line, new seats, new rugs, new carpeting, new this, new that.
You know when all the rusting is going to take place? There's going to be pent-up rust.
That's what's going to happen.
The second you get it out of the water.
The whole thing is going to turn to rust. By the time you put it down on the ground, it'll be gone.
You'll turn around and say,
wait a minute, where's the car?
Yeah, jeez, I don't know. I mean,
what's it going to cost you to get it out of the water?
Nothing.
Nothing. He owns the equipment.
Oh.
But I would go at this. I mean, it sounds like you don't have much else to do. And here's the only catch. You've got to get the water out of everything before it can rust. In other words, if you pull this thing out and let this engine sit around for 2 weeks before you dismantle it, it'll be rusted so tight you'll never turn it again.
See, what I think you should do.
That's my feeling.
If it was me, I'd take the heads off underwater. Well, because, yeah. I mean, you're going to have to work fast.
It's thinking like that's kept him out of institutions of higher learning all over the country.
You suppose we should have a valve job underwater then?
I think so.
I would do the whole job. No, ideally, you'd want it to be taken apart underwater. But, I mean, in all seriousness, you really want to take it apart the day you bring it up.
I think so, too.
And it's possible. Is it possible that the engine could not be junk?
Oh, yeah. I think the engine will turn.
I think it will, too.
Until everything rusts, and then it'll never turn again.
Yeah.
So what's the very first thing I should do? Like, try to fill it up with Marvel Mystery Oil
or
something?
Yes, exactly. You take all the spark plugs out and get the water out as best you can and get some lubricant into those cylinders and move everything up and down and get the oil and water out of the oil pan.
Okay.
Well, Max, this is a good question.
Max, I can't tell you how eager we are to find out how you make out in this.
Well, I'll keep you posted, and I've got a couple artifacts that are just slightly older that I'm going to send you guys.
Wonderful.
We've got some Megalodon shark teeth that the ichthyologists say are about 12 million years old.
Wow.
Jeez, we're dying to see them.
And how many other people know what an ichthyologist is besides you and me?
Hey, well, you know, I'm bored. I haven't got much else going on. I look these words up.
Hey, thanks for calling, Max.
Thank you for having me.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Wow.
Well, it's happened again. You've defenestrated another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Cavs of Belleville Green, Carly Nix, and Catherine Frau Blucher. Fenolosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our interns are Chris Cuff and Emily Mackey. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Bronx Zoo, Caribou, Zebra Roo, Rabbit Stew, Kangaroo, Beef Ragu, Duck Fondue, and Braised Tofu, Howdy Do, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Marge Novera. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our ranch foreman is Hyman Old Cowhand. Our PR director is B. Esser. Our staff bicycle tester is Maya Sertz. Our Russian chauffeur is Peekoff and Dropoff. Our mother-in-law liaison is Stella Payne Diaz, who's married to our father-in-law liaison, Royal Payne Diaz, who are the proud parents of a teenage daughter, Sasha Payne Diaz, and a brother in the military, Major Payne Diaz, and a two-year-old, Ariel Payne Diaz, and they have a dog, Toto Payne Diaz. And the head of our Working Mother Support Group, of course, is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the squirrels doing step aerobics in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and remember, don't drive like my brother.
And remember, don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1040, ramble through the Car Talk archives, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, the 10 cars we hate the most.
Do we hate them because they're gas hogs?
No.
Do we hate them because they're unreliable?
No.
Do we hate them because they leak oil on our nice clean coveralls?
No, no, and no.
No, we hate them because they're too damn reliable. Check out our list of 10 cars that hardly ever contribute to our monthly boat payments.
The 10 cars we hate the most.
Find the list at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though the Professional Clown Association considers expanding into radio whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.